The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So my name is Gil Fronsdal, and I'm one of the two teachers at this center here. And I have been involved in meditation practice my entire adult life. Started when I was about 19. And started with doing Buddhist meditation when I was about 20. And then from there, steadily got more and more involved. Eventually, when I finished college, went and to live near and then in the San Francisco Zen Center. Spent many years practicing Zen. Was ordained as a Zen priest or a Zen monk. Went and spent time practicing in monasteries in Japan. And then at some point I went to Southeast Asia, where I was introduced to the Buddhism of Burma and Thailand. And that's in those countries that they where they have a practice that's called vipassana. And the word vipassana literally means to see clearly. So it was a practice of seeing clearly. And popularly in America nowadays, it's usually referred to as mindfulness. And nowadays, mindfulness is quite popular, and it's kind of lots and lots of books. It's used in clinical settings of all kinds. Lots of research, clinical research being done on the value of mindfulness. Some of you probably were introduced to it. How many of you here were introduced to mindfulness through the 8-week MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction courses that people do? A few of you? You're welcome. So then I went to Southeast Asia, and there was introduced to this and was quite taken by it, and spent time there as a monk, a Buddhist monk and practitioner. And then I came back to this country at some point, and so then I went to graduate school. And what was there left for me to study in graduate school but Buddhist studies? And that included getting a doctorate at Stanford in Buddhist studies, in religious studies. And while I was when I just started at Stanford, there was a small sitting group that met in Palo Alto. And that sitting group asked me if I would lead the sitting group, teach in the sitting group. That was in 1990. And then slowly that group grew. Eventually we were incorporated as a nonprofit. And then in 2001, we bought this building here from two mystical Christian ministers who would sit in silence. That was their primary practice. And they wanted us to have their church because we sit in silence. And then we've steadily grown here. As I've been teaching this intro class for 20 years now, probably. It's one of my favorite things to do. I love doing it, and both because I'm introducing you or trying to offer you a practice that I found extremely meaningful for myself. It brings me a lot of joy and a lot of value. Also because I've seen how much value it brings to other people who learn how to apply it to their lives. And also I enjoy it because each time I teach it, I'm hoping to learn something new. I'm waiting to surprise myself as I speak. So even though some of the stuff is very basic, I'm still kind of trying to, in the course of teaching the course, trying to learn something new about mindfulness. So I don't know if I'll tell you if I get surprised, but I'm hoping that I'll learn something with you. As I said, we've been here since 2001. The kind of Buddhism that we come out of, or are part of, is dedicated to offering whatever we have to offer, the teachings, the practice opportunities, the instructions, freely. And so everything that happens here in this building is offered freely. We have no charges for anything at all. And we have no membership, unless sometimes I joke saying those who want to be members are. And those who prefer not to be members of a religious organization, we don't do that. So everything's offered freely here. And it's quite remarkable that a large community of people have supported this and allowed us to buy the building and pay the bills and a variety of things. And the way that our financial system works is that in a somewhat low-key way, we have a box by the door. You might have seen it. I think it says donation on it. And there are two slots there. One slot is for donations to the center called operations that lets us run the place and various things that are expenses for running it. And the other says teacher. And whoever is teaching any given event that we're doing here will receive the donation that's put in the teacher section of the donation box. And so the two teachers who you know, work for more or less full-time here, which is myself and Andrea Fella, our livelihood basically comes from this kind of system of... we don't really like to call it donation, even though that's what it says in the box, but of because it's kind of a sacred thing in our tradition of generosity. So we live in an economy of generosity, which is quite a wonderful thing. So this is going to be a 5-week course class on mindfulness meditation and mindfulness practice. And mindfulness is a core practice in Buddhism. And I'll make reference to Buddhism as we go along here. But please know that this is being offered in a way that hopefully you can take in the Buddha, the mindfulness, learn about the mindfulness, find the value of mindfulness. And if you don't care about Buddhism whatsoever, you can just leave that here. It's not needed. Mindfulness doesn't need Buddhism, but Buddhism needs mindfulness. So it's being offered, you know, just as a wonderful technique and practice that you can take on independent of Buddhism. However, in Buddhism, mindfulness is central in many, many ways. And it's mindfulness is introduced as something that seems very simple and ordinary in its essence. But when you learn to apply it well and deeply, it's the meditation practice that brings awakening or enlightenment or realization or whatever terms you like to use for the highest attainment that they offer in Buddhism. So it's kind of, I think, quite interesting that something that's so simple can be so profound and so, you know, has such wonderful fruit if you follow through with it. So the simplicity of mindfulness is that it's simply paying attention to what's happening in the present moment as it's happening. So it's a simple attention, and it's nothing particularly esoteric or Eastern or Asian or Buddhist about paying attention. This is what my mother told me to do growing up. A lot. Gil, pay attention. And maybe because I didn't, that's why I ended up with now an adult life of cultivating and teaching people to pay attention. So it's a very ordinary thing to pay attention. But it's learning a number of things. It's learning to pay attention with some stability so we can really be fully in the present moment when we're paying attention. And one of the first lessons that a lot of people learn, probably many of you will learn, is not an easy task to stay present in the present moment. You'll sit down. You want a little bit louder out there? Can you get a little bit louder in there? And so you'll find that your mind wanders off, thinking about the past, what happened earlier in the day, or what happened in high school. You'll start thinking about the future. It's very common for people to spend a lot of time planning in our local culture here. Or you start fantasizing. All of these movements of the mind make it very hard to be present and in some high-quality way, to really see and feel and offer presence to what's happening now. So part of the training of mindfulness is to learn how to show up and really present, to really show up for what's going on. And probably most of you have had the experience of meeting a friend or meeting a person or meeting some people and seeing clearly when a person is present for you and when they're not. You know, sometimes it feels very unsatisfying if someone says hi to you, and by the time they said hi, they're on to the next person. They're not really there for you. Versus someone who really stops, is fully there, and really listens, and they offer this real presence. The idea is to learn to practice mindfulness, attention, so we can offer the present moment, offer ourselves the quality attention. We really stop and really hear. So part of the training is to learn how to do that. Another part of mindfulness is to learn to do it without reactivity. So without judgment, without being for or against, without criticizing yourself or criticizing the experience or criticizing what you're having in the present moment, or without being attached to it or clinging to it or trying to fix it or want it or hold on to it or push it away. What you probably find also is the mind is very clever and tends to, an untrained mind tends to be a mind that is reacting to things all the time. And that reactive mind is exhausting. It creates a lot of stress. So to get the most value out of mindfulness, it's also learning how not to be reactive. And so one of the popular definitions of mindfulness in the secular world, in the clinical world, which they've taken this practice and applied it to psychology, is they often use kind of the expression, to be mindful is to pay attention kindly or to pay attention with compassion, because it's an alternative way of paying attention than a reactive attention, being for or against and fighting and clinging and things, but rather kind of open-handed, open-hearted attention where we're kind of kind to what goes on. Some of you will find that you have a mind that has a tendency to be critical, maybe even mean, and it can be anything you pay attention to gets somehow pulled into this orbit of criticalness or discouragement or despair or judgments or something. And so the practice of mindfulness is to learn how to shed those tendencies, at least for the time you're doing the meditation or doing mindfulness, so there's a high quality attention to what's happening that's not reactive, just being present for what is. The third benefit of mindfulness, or the third thing we're trying to learn in mindfulness, is then as... it's rare. So let's see how it goes again. So the third thing about mindfulness is to learn not only... So first we have to learn to be present. That's the first lesson with our attention. The second lesson is to learn to do it non-reactively. Kindly or compassionately, if you will. The third thing to learn is to see more deeply what is going on in our life. Once you're present and non-reactive, once you don't have the veil or filters or clouds of reactivity over your experience, you can see much more clearly what's going on. You can see yourself in a deep way, you can see the world around you in a better way, and you can see your choices in a better way. And that's the fourth important thing that mindfulness is trying to do, is to place you in the seat of choice so that you can choose how to live your life, how to respond to situations, rather than be controlled by your reactivity. So if you have a conversation with someone and you see you're welling up with anger, you can be present for the anger. You know you're angry. You're not angry with yourself for being angry, just there for the anger. You can look more deeply into the anger and see what's triggering it. And you have that. You can see that you have a choice of whether to act on the anger or not. And you choose not to act on it. And in that choice of not to act on it, you're free. And this idea of freedom, finding the place of choice, finding how to be free in our life so we're not driven, not acting compulsively, is a central aspect of what we're trying to do with this mindfulness practice. In the process of doing that, you'll learn a lot about yourself, but more important than learning about yourself, you'll probably discover capacities of well-being, of peace, of compassion, even of love and joy, that sometimes is incomparable to what ordinary life presents. It's not going to happen in a 5-week introductory course to have that level of results from the practice, probably. But it's not so uncommon to people to have tremendous feelings of well-being from doing this kind of practice. All from doing something extremely ordinary. Just paying attention. And I think, you know, you're all doing it. I think all of you are paying attention to me. So you have the capacity. You're already doing it. And now we're going to take what you already do and develop it and strengthen it and make it more kind of a more useful tool and a capacity that you have. So attention is something you do. Attention is something you do out of choice, that you have choice and mastery over, rather than having your attention hijacked by all your desires and wishes and fears and reactivities that go on. And you'll see how this works when you sit down. When we sit down to be quiet now, some of you will discover, lo and behold, your attention gets hijacked. So that's the plan, is to introduce this to you. And we do it in this 5-week course systematically. First by starting where it's supposed to be somewhat simple, which is mindfulness of posture and mindfulness of breathing. Breathing is kind of often used in many spiritual circles, especially in Buddhism, as one of the primary ways to train the mind in mindfulness, in the present moment attention, in non-reactivity, just coming back to the breath. Very simple thing. So I'll talk about that in a while. Next week, I'm going to talk about mindfulness of the body. Buddhist spirituality puts a tremendous emphasis on embodiment, being connected to your body, being in your body. And so learning how to be mindful of your body is a very important part of this training. So much so that sometimes I prefer to not call it mindfulness, because it gives priority to the mind, but rather to call the training we're doing here bodyfulness, coming into the body. And then the third week is mindfulness of emotions. And rather than struggling with emotions or being attached to emotions are an important part of human life. A lot of the benefit, direct benefit that many people can get from mindfulness is learning how to be wisely attentive to their emotional life. And then the fourth week will be mindfulness of thinking. Some people have complained that we should really have mindfulness of thinking the first day, because you'll see in a little while that why. Because that's where the mind tends to go for many of us, into thinking. But you'll understand how to be mindful of thinking much better if you understand how to be mindful of your breathing, how to be mindful of your body, and how to be mindful of emotions. Because those three are kind of a wonderful foundation for getting a handle on what thinking is all about and how to be free of thinking. And then the final week will be a kind of summing up and an application of it in the wider areas of our life. Okay, so how many of you have meditated before? It's a good number. How many of you have had no meditation instruction before? Great. It's great to have people who've had experience before, because you come with that as a foundation. It's great to have people who are brand new, had no experience, because you come with a beginner's mind to learn and find out. So, in the traditions of Buddhism that I practiced in, when they taught meditation, there was a lot of value placed on the meditation posture. So I would like to spend a little bit of time with talking about the meditation posture, and then we'll do a meditation together once we get that established. The reason to focus on the posture is, I want to mention two important reasons, maybe three. One is that if you have a good posture, basically aligned posture, you're less likely to feel uncomfortable when you're meditating. If you're all slouched over or sitting in an uncomfortable way, then you get uncomfortable pretty quickly. The other reason is that if you can take a good posture that expresses a certain kind of alertness, then that alertness supports alertness in meditation. And we want to be alert when we meditate. The idea is to be alert and calm. And some people think that meditation is just about becoming calm, but if you only focus on calm, you'll fall asleep. And so the idea is to be both develop alert, calm and alertness. And so to have a posture that's upright and alert, one that kind of lets your chest be a little bit more open so that it's easier to breathe, so your breathing is not compressed. And also the other reason to focus on posture is that people tend to express a lot of their inner life through the posture that they take. And by beginning to consciously taking a posture that's dignified, it provides a very interesting reference point for the inner life and our reactivity. And you might watch as you go through the day how your posture shifts and changes depending on your mood and what happens. By becoming mindful, aware of what you do with your posture, it can often provide information to what's going on, what your reactions, what's going on for you, around you. So the classic posture in meditation is to sit and meditate on the floor. And you don't have to do that. It's fine to sit in a chair, but I'll first mention the floor. Part of the reason of sitting cross-legged on the floor is that you have a low center of gravity. And so it's somehow a little bit easier to relax and let go when you have a low center of gravity, especially when you, if you have sit cross-legged, where you have a nice wide base, a tripod base of your knees and your butt, and it creates a kind of strong sense of stability. I read many years ago a study in physiology that the two postures that allow a human being to relax their musculature the most deeply is what's in yoga is called the corpse pose, laying completely flat on your back, and equally sitting in cross-legged upright this way. Sitting upright this way, I'm sitting now, allows the body to relax more deeply, not automatically, but once you learn how to do it and body conditions itself to it, more deeply than slouching in the couch. So which is counterintuitive, because if you're exhausted, you want to just like give up, right? But this allows a much deeper letting go. So it's a good posture to learn, though it takes a while for the body to learn. It might take actually a few years for that kind of depth of capacity. So the way to sit on the floor is to sit on a cushion. And we have these round cushions that, or half-moon cushions that people will sit on. And I don't know if we have any more cushions anywhere. Shinquan, do we have more cushions anywhere out there? Because there's we have these round cushions like this. And the idea, the reason to sit up on them is that then it's easier to get the knees down, and the small of the back, the curve in the lower part of the back can be maintained. It should have a natural curvature, should be there. And that puts the least amount of strain on your spine and your back. If you sit flat on the ground without building up some height, then you tend to kind of curve the back, and over time that gets, you know, puts a strain on it, starts hurting. depending on how open the hips are, you can sit either higher or lower. If the hips are really open, people like to sit on very little height. If the hips are tight, then you know, get more height. Some people sit on two cushions high. If you can't get your knees down, some people will put a cushion under the knees, under both knees, so they're supported. What I recommend people do when they sit on the floor is not actually to cross their legs, but to sit what's called Burmese or tailor fashion, with one leg is in front of the other. You can see how my arms are like that, if you can see on the outer hall. So, you know, Shinquan can show you. She can just sit in front of you. She's, Shinquan, can you hear me? Can you do that? Is that possible out there? And demonstrate? Sitting in the tail. Sit tailor fashion for them, Burmese fashion, so the people out there can see what I'm doing, like this, so their legs are not actually crossed. Or anywhere, I don't know where, so they can see. Maybe you have to kind of walk around and sit in different places out there. And that puts the least amount of torque on the knees, and so the knees don't twist so much. If you start sitting in what's called half lotus, and you bring one foot up on your other thigh, it's kind of nice if you can do it. But if you can't do it, boy, does it hurt. You know, can't sustain it very long. Sitting full lotus is very nice, but that's even harder, right, for the knees. And there's no need for it. So sitting, you know, just this Burmese is fine. So experiment with the height. If you're sitting in a chair, the usual instruction is to sit away from the backrest of the chair. Some people need to use the backrest, in which case it's fine to use it. But the idea is that what we do with our posture expresses something of our inner life. There's a reciprocal relationship. And in that meditation, we're learning to become self-reliant and free. It's actually easier to cultivate that self-reliance and freedom if you're not leaning against something that's supporting you. It's easier to be alert. Now, some people in busy lives are so, you know, tired that maybe they really need to use the backrest, or they have back injury or something, so it's fine to use it. But you might experiment with not using it, or experiment using both ways and see what is most conducive for meditation for you. If you want to use the backrest, the lower the support, and a really good strong support in the lower part of your back, the better for meditation. For sitting in a chair, the usual instructions is to not cross the legs, but have both feet and legs parallel to each other, with the knees at the same height or lower than the hips. Because if the knees are higher than the hips, then it pushes out the lower back and puts a strain there. So depending on your how long you are, how high, tall or short you are, you want to get some support, so either sit higher or something. Some people like to have it parallel, going straight out. Some people like to have the legs in the chair sitting wide, so it's got a wide base. Then to have a straight spine. Probably one of the most important things for meditation posture is a straight spine. And there's a trick to be done. And that is you can take your hands on either side of your hips, on the chair or on the floor, and lift yourself almost up off the chair or the cushion. So that your chest comes out a little bit, and you kind of lift yourself up. And then as you release your hand, let your shoulders roll back slightly. And if you do that, you might have a sense the shoulders are more hanging, the chest is more open. Your belly might be a little bit tense now, then relax the belly. And what's really nice is try to have a relaxed, soft belly when you meditate. Okay. So before I continue, I'm doing a sound check. Is this a little bit too loud for you, or just right? Okay, because I think it's a little bit louder than usual, and there's a little ringing I hear.
I'm trying to get that
outer
bulk.
So then the hands, you can do anything with the hands where basically both hands are doing the same thing. The classic hand posture in Buddhism is like the statue up here of one hand on top in the palm of the other in front of you on the lap. I usually sit with my hands on my thighs, and usually with the hands, palms down. Some people talk about it like having a palms up, either one. But what you want to be careful for with your hands, that your hands aren't pulling your shoulders forward too much. That puts a strain. So if you're sitting this tailor fashion, I'm said, and you have your hands resting on your ankle, the distance between your shoulders and your ankle is so far that it might, your hands actually might be pulling you down, and that feels strained. So what you can do is get a pillow or a sweater or something and put it on top of your ankle and then hold your hands up 4, 5, 6 inches so they're higher, so not being pulled down so much. If you have your hands too far forward on your knee, it might also pull you forward. So sometimes it's helpful to pull the hand back on your thigh so that your elbow is right next to the sides of your rib cage, so that not forward of it. And then the head should be on top of your shoulders. but balanced on top of your shoulders. And if you lean forward and your head is in front of your center of gravity, then the muscles of your back have to work a lot because the head is really heavy. And so you want to try to keep it balanced. And you also, some people will tip their head to the side or look to the side. Some people will stick their chin up when they meditate. The idea is to have the chin tucked down slightly and back. So there's a little more opening in the last vertebrae and the skull. And try to have the ears so they're lined up with the shoulders. So that way the muscles don't have to work so hard. And then in our tradition, we usually meditate with the eyes closed. And you don't have to. It's fine to meditate with eyes open. It's just that sometimes it's easier to give careful attention to something, the breath, for example, what's going on in your body, if you're not also distracted by the sights around you. Like if you're listening to some people, if they're trying to listen to a really faint sound far away, will close their eyes, try to hear it. So there's a heightened sense of it. The other senses become more heightened sometimes when the eyes are closed. But if you're not comfortable with that, you can keep them open. That's the basic idea of posture. If you're sitting cross-legged on the floor and you're new to this, it takes a while for the legs to adapt. One of the things that can happen is the legs can fall asleep. Almost always what that is the circulation is cut, which is not a problem. if you're uncomfortable, you can, switch your legs and massage them a little bit. But a couple of things about if the legs fall asleep. One is, don't stand up quickly. I knew a woman once who stood up quickly for meditation. Her leg was asleep, and her leg didn't hold her up, and she fell and broke her foot. So meditation can be dangerous. So you want to massage your foot, kind of shake it, and wait until the sensation comes back. It usually won't take more than a minute or two. If it takes more than 3 or 4 or 5 minutes for your sensation to come back, then you're not pinching the blood flow, but rather you're pinching a nerve. And you never want to pinch a nerve again. So if it takes that long to sensation come back, next time you came to meditate, be very careful you don't sit that particular way again. You don't want to do that kind of, because you can do lasting damage to your nerve if you pinch it. So it's rare, but it has happened occasionally when people try to tough it out or something. So if you think that if it takes longer than, 3 minutes or something for the sensation to come back, then you might want to consider that its nerves are being pinched. So that's the basic of posture. So now we can try meditating. But you've been sitting for a while, and it might be good to stand up and shake or stretch or do something. Okay.
But I had to completely.
So as we're about to start this meditation, I want to give a piece of instruction that I hope you'll remember. For however long you meditate, I mean, not just now, but forever into your life as you meditate, that meditation works a lot easier if you are kind and forgiving. And if you can't be kind and forgiving, be kind and forgiving about that. It's okay. So take a posture that allows you to both be alert, physically alert, but also perhaps allows you to relax your body. And then gently close your eyes. And then with your eyes, take a few long, slow, deep breaths, letting your rib cage expand outwards in all directions. And then as you exhale deeply and fully, relax. Breathing in deeply, and then exhaling and letting go. And the deep breaths at the beginning of meditation are a reminder of where you're going to try to keep your attention during the meditation. Here and now, in this body at this time. And then let your breathing return to normal. And for the mindfulness meditation, We make no special effort to breathe in any special way, no yogic breathing, for example, just an ordinary breath. And then you might now scan through your body and see if there's any places of tension that might be relatively easy to soften or relax. If you start at the top of your body, you can maybe relax your forehead, around your eyes. It might be possible to relax the jaw. Perhaps there can be a softening in the shoulders and the shoulder blades. And also a softening of the belly. It can be hard to keep the belly soft and relaxed, so it's okay if you can't. But to let this belly hang forward, release the belly to gravity, sinks down into the pelvic cavity. So one of the constants of our life is breathing. And this constant companion you have turns out to be a wonderful friend, wonderful ally to have. So if you can now become aware of how your body experiences breathing, how the body moves, expands and contracts, the sensations that come into play as you breathe. And if you can notice what part of your body experiences breathing the most, or the most clearest experience, so the movement of the chest, movements of the belly, as they rise and fall or expand and contract? Is it sensations of the air going in and out through your nostrils? Or if you have trouble feeling your body breathing, you can put your hand on your belly or your chest and feel the movement there as you breathe. And maybe you can let go of what you're thinking about in favor of feeling the rhythm of breathing in and breathing out in your body. Feeling the alternating experience of breathing in and breathing out. Bringing the experience of breathing into focus so that you're there feeling it. You might have other concerns which are pressing on you. You might have emotions or tiredness or restlessness. All that is okay. Everything's okay. But try, instead of focusing on those things, take that wonderful capacity of attention and bring attention to the experience of breathing. Every time you exhale, see if you can let go of what you're thinking about in favor of being present for the experience of breathing. See if you can be alert enough to notice when your mind drifts off in thought. And not to be critical of that, but not also to be seduced by your thinking or caught up in it. Being willing to put it aside for these few minutes to come back to your breathing. Breathing in and breathing out. Meditation is helped if you're relaxed about whatever is happening for you. It's okay. But in being relaxed about it, then turn yourself over to experience breathing. And as a way of helping you to stay with your breathing, very, very softly in the back of your mind, you can say the word in as you breathe in. And out as you breathe out. Just a little saying in and out as a way of having continuity and staying present for each breath. So if you find your mind wandering off in thought a lot, then you're learning the lesson of how difficult it is for the mind to be present. If you're able to stay with it, hanging in there with breathing, then you're beginning to develop, cultivate the capacity for presence, for attention in the present moment. Letting go of your thinking, putting your thinking aside. So in the foreground of attention, just breathing. Nothing you need to figure out or do or accomplish or plan. You just rest in the experience of breathing. Trusting the value of this radical simplicity, being present and breathing. Part of what we're trying to learn is to be non-reactive in our awareness, meaning not critical or not clinging to anything, kind of an open-minded awareness of what is, all the while trying to keep the breathing at the center of it all, coming back to your breathing, breathing consciously. Allowing everything to fall away except breathing. And we'll stay here to meditate on the breathing for one more minute. See if in the last minute you can put everything else aside and just try to stay continuously, one breath after another. And to end this sitting, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. As you breathe in deeply, feeling your body, feeling yourself against the chair, the cushion, the floor. And then when you're ready, you can open your eyes. So breathing has a number of virtues that for some people can support meditation practice. Breath makes often a good foundation for meditation. In fact, in some schools of Buddhism, it's the only thing they do in meditation is to focus on the breathing. Some schools of Zen, it's primarily what they do. And it can take you quite far in the spiritual world, the Buddhist world, meditating on the breathing. For our tradition here, we begin with the breath and then we expand out to include all our human experiences, the domain of the meditation. So over the weeks, you'll see what I mean by that. But the breath has a number of benefits. One is that it's a rhythmic and alternating sensation. And there's something about a sensation which is rhythmic or alternating or oscillating, which makes it easier for the mind to pay attention, to start resting or staying focused on it. If you just take a fixed point of sensation or an image or something, try to keep your mind there, the chances are you'll strain. But because it's rhythmic and flowing and oscillating, it's a little bit harder to strain when we meditate on the breath. It can happen, but it's a little bit harder. And the rhythm of breathing in and out, you can think of as a massage, of trying to keep your awareness present and focused, but also soft and relaxed though you do it. Also, the breathing is a bridge between many different aspects of our lives, from our physical life, our psychological life, our physical life, our emotional life, our inner life, and our outer life. And as we begin focusing on the breathing, we start learning a lot about ourselves because a lot goes on in the connection to our breathing. You'll see if you get spend a lot of time focusing on your breath that how you breathe, what parts of your body are activated when you breathe, changes depending on how you're feeling, what's going on around you. And many times when people are attached or very resistant or caught by something, the breathing is affected. Sometimes the breathing gets held or frozen. By bringing attention to breathing and staying present for the breathing, it's harder to keep it frozen and locked in. Especially some of the surface ways in which the breath can be held begin to release. And so then begins to relax. Also, if you're able to stay focused on the breath and let go of your thoughts, it's also very relaxing because the primary source of most tension is how we're thinking and how we're locked in our thoughts or caught up in our thoughts. And so if you can start kind of putting aside your thoughts, it tends to create a lot of relaxation and calm for people. And some people find that helpful in meditation, the idea that our thoughts need to be respected. They're kind of insecure, our thinking. And so you need to respect it. You don't have to reassure it that you're not abandoning it forever. And you have important things to think about, and no one's denying that. But you're going to take a little vacation from thinking, and you're going to put all your concerns up on a shelf. Some people like you like the image of a shelf. You put up there on the shelf to be picked up later if it's useful. And kind of engaging that kind of intentional thinking about thinking. Sometimes makes it easier to make that transition to not be so focused on whatever it is we want to think about. So we put it up on the shelf. It can be later, later. It's important, but later, later, not now. Now, one of the interesting things about meditating on the breath is this kind of meditation practice works when it works, and it works when it doesn't work. So this is what I mean. So if it works, that means you can kind of stay present for your breaths, relax with your breathing, kind of learn to develop kind of present moment awareness in a high quality, just staying with the breath, staying with the breath. Thoughts, concerns fall away, and you feel more and more really here and present. Some people will think that breath is boring. You know, why should I follow the breath? It's a boring thing I think of to focus on. But actually, if you drop boredom is an activity of the mind has to create boredom. So as the mind relaxes and relaxes his thoughts, relaxes his activities, the breath actually gets more and more interesting. And it tends to produce a lot of well-being. But it takes a while to kind of get into the rhythm of breathing and being focused to develop this well-being and concentration. But the breath also works when it doesn't work. And this is what I mean. Mindfulness practice is primarily a practice of noticing what's happening. So, if you go up to some mountain streams, and there's a very clear, very shallow stream of water, and it's maybe the grade of the river is, stream is very, very low grade, slope, you look down into the clear water, and you can't tell the water's moving. You think it's water standing still. But then you take a stick, and you put the stick in vertically into the water, and you see a little wake gets formed on the side of the stick, and you see actually there's a current, that the water is flowing. So you needed to have the reference point of the stick to see the current. So the same thing with the currents of our mind. Sometimes it's hard to really clearly see what's going on inside of us, in our mind, our hearts, our emotions, unless we have a reference point. And and trying to be focused on the breathing, sitting still, eyes closed, trying to be with the breath, is like it's like putting a stick into the current of your life. And you'll start discovering what's going on. And one of the things you might discover is it's very difficult to stay with your breathing. Maybe it's impossible. You can do maybe half a breath before you wander off in thought, if you even remember to get back to your breath, because you get pulled into your thinking. Don't take anything as a mistake. It's okay. It's all okay. And what you're learning now is you're learning your mind's out of control. And then it worked. You're noticing something. Part of the functions meditation practice is to notice what is actually going on in your life in a higher way. Some of you probably didn't realize how tired you were until you sat down and tried to sit quietly here. Some of you didn't realize how restless you were until you sat down to be here. Some of you didn't know some of your emotions and feelings that came up or were present. You hadn't really noticed until you stopped to sit down this way. And lo and behold, nothing is wrong. There's no mistakes when you meditate. It's just something to notice. And if you feel like my mind is out of control, I can't meditate, congratulations. Not that you can meditate, you just did. You notice something about yourself. And we say that if you have a mind that's out of control, it's better to know it than not know it. So you've learned something. So that's why I say that this breath meditation works when it doesn't work. The task is to notice what's going on, and if what's going on is you can't stay with the breath, congratulations, you notice something. You notice that you can't stay with your breath, and then you notice why. And then we try to be non-reactive about that. Not be judgmental by them, and certainly not be judgmental about ourselves. I can't meditate, I'm the worst meditator, or I'm the best meditator because I can do 5 breaths in a row. And the idea is, you know, keep it really, really simple. The simpler you can be in your attitude of what's going on, the easier it is to meditate. The more we get caught up in the swirl of reactivity and judgments and commentary and all these things, the further away you get from the benefits of meditation. But if you get swirled away, caught up in all those things, be content that you learn to see it. A hugely important part of mindfulness is self-knowledge, learning how we operate, what goes on for us. So don't think that anything's a mistake. It's all part of the learning. And as we learn ourselves and see ourselves better and better and better, day after day of doing this, remarkable transformations begin happening. But it takes time. I've known people who the first day they were introduced to meditation were ready to bolt and never come back because this was impossible. But they did come back, and slowly, 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 there's a transformation and change. So I'll give you an example of a slow transformation. I hope it'll inspire you. Actually, not meditation, but it comes from the world of yoga. So I was told of a yoga teacher who, when people were doing the triangle pose, you know, kind of lean over to the side, and so one arm goes up to the ceiling and one arm kind of goes down to the floor, I think that's how it works. And some people can't get one arm all the way down to the floor. So the instruction was, back when they had telephone books, is to get a whole stack of telephone books until you had enough telephone books that you can put your hand and rest it on the telephone book. And then do the pose every day, and every day tear out one page of the telephone book. And one page might seem insignificant, but if you do it every day, those insignificant little movements, eventually your hand will get down to the floor. Maybe it'll take 2 or 3 years, but I don't know how many pages you need to have. But, you know, there's change that can happen. And by the time we get to the floor, feel really grateful. It's really important. So the same thing with meditation. Sometimes people get the benefits of meditation immediately. They feel, wow, that's really great. I feel so calm, so great. And sometimes it's more incremental, like that's the telephone pages. But you just do it day after day, and things change. So we sat for about 15, meditated for about 15 minutes. And it might be interesting to hear from some of you what that was like, or if you have any questions of what happened there. Anything anyone would like to say? Yes, please.
And we're going to use the mic here. So and just one quick etiquette. If we talk in the top of it, works really well. But if we try to go to the side, look what happens. So talk right in like the top of an ice cream cone. And you want to have the green button on.
I'm a new meditator in the last, year, but really sporadically until recently, in the last couple of months. And what I've noticed is that when I first started, let's say months ago, I would feel almost a panic feeling the whole time, where I could never get enough breath. And I always felt like, you know, something was wrong with my lungs. And I would just go through it. My heart would be pounding. I could never get a deep enough breath. And I just noticed today, and maybe one of the Sundays that I've been here, maybe it'll come back, but it's gone.
Great.
And it's just a really subtle, well, not so subtle change, but I have no idea why. But I don't have that panicky, heart pounding, not enough oxygen feeling.
Wonderful.
And I think that's just from sticking with it a little bit.
Yeah, sticking with it. So for you, the whole telephone book went away. You know, suddenly. So, one of the wonderful and irritating aspects of being a meditation teacher for other people, not for me, is I end up saying almost the same thing to everyone. I say, it's normal. It's completely okay. It's common. And because I've seen everything. And that what you described is normal enough. And we can psychoanalyze it or try to psychologize why it is. But having some people, when they first stand up to meditate, the heart will race, they'll panic, they'll sweat. Because, you know, it's a very powerful meeting with yourself. Some people are strangers to themselves and are so busy that the deeper things that need to be processed that don't finally have a chance to come to the surface. And so that's a common enough experience. I'm glad you stuck with it, because it'll change if you hang out with it. Someone else? Is it intimidating to talk in such a big crowd?
I was surprised how uncomfortable I became trying to like hold the posture, and that's something that I'd like to practice with the pillow and spine straight.
Yeah, so we have. So next time if you come, you can get a pillow from the outer hall.
Got one.
Oh, you got one, yeah. And sometimes it takes a while because to develop this posture. It's a worthwhile thing to develop the good posture. But, you know, if we have bad postural habits, then some muscles are weak, and those muscles will get tired until they get strong. And also, poor posture, some muscles are contracted and tight, and they'll also hurt if we try to sit up straight. It takes a while for it to kind of work it all out. And don't push it, you know, you don't have to, you know, make meditation grueling. But slowly kind of beginning to work this posture. And if it gets uncomfortable, you can take a break or sit in a chair or, you know, change your posture if you need to. But it's a really a great thing to develop this good posture.
Hi, you're a great guide. What I'm wondering is, if I do this at home by myself, how do I guide myself, or how do I know when I've done it enough or not enough, or things of that nature?
Okay, so what I recommend is that I recommend that for this duration of this 5-week course, that you meditate every day at home, and you don't have to. You can just meditate when you come here for the class. But you'll get a lot more benefit from doing it every day, and you'll understand the instructions more. They'll be more relevant. They'll be clear what they're all about. So if you can, I recommend every day. And I recommend 20 minutes a day at the beginning for the first week. And some of you might find that if 20 minutes seems to work well, that every week for the next 2 or 3 weeks to add 5 minutes and see what that's like. And then after the 5 weeks, then you could go back to 20 minutes or 15 minutes or do something different. But
so should I set an alarm or something?
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Because I'll have no idea why my eyes are closed.
Yeah, so I recommend setting an alarm. And you can, for people who have, nowadays, a lot of people have phones or smartphones around here, you can download apps, meditation timer apps for free. I think there's one on our website. You can download from our website. And there's other ones that... there's one called an app called Insight Timer, and they make have very very nice Tibetan bell that rings. You set it for a certain number of minutes, and it plays silence, and then at the end of the silence, you know, very nice sound gong. So it's I recommend getting a timer so you don't have to look at your watch all the time. And then it can be helpful to give some thought about when the best time is to meditate. The ancient tradition is to meditate early in the morning when life hasn't begun and, you know, things are quiet or still and everything's kind of easier to be quiet. Some people will wait until they have their coffee. Some people their shower. Some people do it first thing when they get up, find it nice. Some people find it works better to do it in the evening when they come back from work or before going to bed. Different people have different rhythms and when it might work best. It's helpful, if it's possible, to do it the same time every day. Because something about the regularity of the same time, there's kind of a habit, the body develops a kind of familiarity with the time, the place, the expectation. You get kind of into a rhythm of it. And so it helps kind of the deepening of it all. It also helps, if you can, to do it every day in the same place. So if there's a corner of your home, a corner of your bedroom or something where you know you're not going to be disturbed, that can be like your little meditation corner. And so that place is only associated with meditation so that you don't think about other things when you're there. Like you don't want to put, you know, you don't want to put your meditation cushion in front of your computer because I'm sure there's important emails to answer and you'll realize that in the middle of the sitting. The mind is really tricky and all kinds of urgent things will pop up. That, you know, like the freezer needs to be defrosted now. Or that email needs to be responded to. So you really need to, so a regular discipline, a regular place, time is helpful. It's helpful to have loose-fitting clothes so you're not constricted, especially around the waist. So those are all kind of helps the discipline of it to keep going regularly. Yes, over here. There comes Elaine with another one here. You're in the corner. Wait for the mic. Coming. Are the batteries dead in that one? Maybe.
So, I think a prior person asked the same question, but the answer seems so unimaginably obtainable. Is that English? To me, I'll ask it again. So when I'm sitting, keeping my head in the center of my shoulders,
yeah.
It's like I'm mostly relaxed, but it's like a big effort to get my head centered, and so it's like, you know, focusing on my breathing, and then I'm going back to my neck a whole lot. And so what I heard you say is you just, that's the way it is for a while, and then practice.
Yeah, it can be. But you can also, I mean, the part of the spirit of mindfulness meditation is experimentation, trial and error. There's no right or wrong. So if you find it a strain to hold your head back, try holding it, letting it relax and go forward in the way it wants to. And you learn from that. If you can meditate beautifully that way, that's fine. But you might find that builds up a strain over time as well. So in the long term, you might be better off kind of being, you know, keeping it well balanced. But you can experiment and see and learn for yourself if you feel like it's too much of a challenge.
Well, I think it is. It is better to to be centered. So.
Yeah. It can be better, but also if you're new to all this, maybe you don't want to have to deal with too many things all at once. So maybe it's enough to deal with the breath, and you know, getting a hang of it. So maybe you don't want to deal with your head for the time being, and that can come later.
So I guess I want you to say, it's a lot to focus. You know, it's a lot to do, and
it's okay. You can do, eventually it gets better, and you can do it. It's a good thing to do. Yes, do it. I'm a slow learner. Yes, back up there.
I've meditated off and on throughout the years, but it seems like every time I do, and similar to what the woman there mentioned, I feel like I'm not getting enough breath if I'm breathing through my nose. So then I go, okay, should I breathe through my mouth? And I do that, and I get more air, but is that the right way to do it? And my mind gets so caught up in that. Is there a right way?
I think it's best when you meditate to think there's no mistakes, there's no wrong. And what the focus that we're trying to do in meditation is just to notice. So if you find yourself, if your experience of breathing is one of, there's a lot of different ways we can experience breathing. So one of the ways you described is feeling like you're not getting enough air. So your job then is just to really notice what that's like to breathe that way. Some people find they're controlling their breath, and they're like, I'm not supposed to control the breath, you know, because I'm supposed to be relaxed. And it's fine to control the breath. You're just supposed to notice what it's like to have a controlled breath. Or your breath is shallow. You know, we're in post-Esalen, California. You know, we're supposed to have a deep, relaxed breath, you know, and so, you know, you can't really be spiritual in California unless you have a really deep, long breath. And so you have all these judgments about the short, shallow breath you have. Don't worry about it. There's no mistake. Your job is just to notice what it's like to have a short, shallow breath. That's all. So it's all okay. Just notice how it is. And what happens is, as we start noticing in a non-reactive way, simple, relaxed way, noticing how it is, things will begin changing.
But do you generally breathe through your nose?
Generally, we breathe through the nose, but if you're welcome to breathe through your mouth if you'd like. Am I not listening to the questions very well today?
One comment I just wanted to say about the breathing part is I initially noticed it too, and then I realized, is my mind thinking that I don't know how to breathe right, so I'm just going to breathe. And it doesn't matter how the breathing happens, I'm just going to let it flow. And it immediately eased my thoughts about
Perfect,
it.
Yes.
I was just like, that's my mind just getting distracted again, and I'm going to stop panicking, and I'm just going to breathe. And then it just kind of, it didn't matter if it, I did it through my nose, it just was natural, and the panic just kind of subsided.
Yes. So this idea of being non-reactive and allowing no mistakes, just letting it be as it is, not be concerned about it, things begin to shift on their own.
So suppose part of your body starts itching. Would you recommend just scratching it right away? Or ignoring it to see if it goes away? Or ignoring it until you know whether or not it's going to go away by itself, in which case you do scratch it if it doesn't go away?
Plan ahead before you can meditate. Do all the itching you can that you think is going to be relevant. And the Yeah, so it's fine to scratch an itch if you want to. Next week, when I talk about mindfulness of the body, I'll talk about the kind of mindfulness and attention and focus that we could use to bring mindfulness to an itch rather than scratching it. And it's possible to develop a lot of strong mindfulness, strong concentration, and a lot of self-understanding and self-discipline by not scratching an itch. And some people choose, it's a choice, you don't have to. Some people choose to meet that challenge and to work with it. One of the great meditation practices in places like Thailand, that is probably one of the, probably more people have gotten concentrated this way than any other meditation object, is mosquito. First you hear the sound. And you hear the sound, and you know what that means. And then you hear it land, you feel it land on the cheek. And then because you're very present and you feel it moving around, and then you don't feel anything for a while, and you know what that means. And then after a while you hear a bzzz and it goes away. And by the time all that's done, you're really present. You were like thinking about, what happened in high school, and you hardly could meditate until then. Now you're really there. So it's possible to meditate that way. You don't have to, but the instructions next week will support this kind of thing.
I have a question. I'm a pretty active guy, and I've done a lot of active meditation before and chanting and stuff, and I feel like when I'm going throughout the day, I'm flowing, I'm moving, and then when someone says sit down and be still, that energy that's in my body, it transforms into anxiety when I'm sitting down in the spot, and it almost feels like it's counterintuitive, because I'm moving and I'm happy, I'm connected, I'm having a great time, and then I feel like restricted, like I'm in a prison. And that feeling becomes of anxiety, and focusing on the breath helped a little bit, but I really want to learn to do this. I just almost feel like it's restricting me than how my body flow wants to move.
Yeah, fascinating. Yeah, it's true. So I'll give you an example of what happens on meditation retreats. We do sometimes week-long silent meditation retreats. And people come who are very active and they want to run or do things very active. They keep it going. And what often they discover is that as they settle in meditation and slowly over the week they get very more focused, more and more in the present, they have this policy that they need to run every day and be active every day. And so they, after lunch, they'll go for a long run. And it's euphoric. They feel really great. And so that was great. It was the right thing. I feel really present now. That's what we're supposed to do. We'd be present. I feel connected. I feel euphoric. I feel joyful. This is great. And they sit down to meditate. And when they meditate, they find out that their mind now is really agitated. Because all the energy of that kind of activity is a relatively coarse, gross activity. And the mind now is spinning and moving much more. And all the work they did of getting quiet has been blown away. And it takes a long time for the mind to get quiet again. Now, one of the reasons why, so if you're always being active all day, you might actually be keeping your mind, your consciousness, at a kind of much more active place. And in being active, you might be doing euphoric kind of things, things that make you feel good, and so it feels very rewarding, but it doesn't go very deep into your psyche. You don't drop deeper down. And what some people discover, I'm not saying it's your situation, but maybe what you report suggests it, is that some people keep really busy, whether it's through sports or athleticism or kind of physical things, or through computer or work or many things, so they don't have to face their anxiety. And if they stop all the business and all the activity, lo and behold, they have to face what they've been running away from. And so it might be very interesting. If you have never done this process, I'd encourage you to run the experiment and really challenge yourself and see what goes on under the surface. Sit still, be really quiet, and see if you can work through that feeling of restriction, work through the anxiety, and see what's below that. Because in terms of being unrestricted, I think there's no experience in human life that can feel as boundless, as limitless, as the experiences that come with meditation. And the feelings of restriction, like the feeling of boredom I mentioned earlier, is a certain kind of activity of the mind that your mind is doing. It's not inherent in meditation. And so the idea is to work through that and go into a deeper place. So that's, that makes some sense, what I said? Some sense.
Yeah.
You didn't want to hear it. Okay, so there is this green sheet of paper that I think we have somewhere out there, which is every week we have a handout, and there's two sides of it. One is kind of just general teachings for the topic of the week, particular instructions around the particular topic of today, mindfulness of breathing. And then there are a set of exercises, mindfulness exercises you could try out at home during the week that might support this process of what we're doing here. And so keep it simple. Just keep it simple. Just sit down, close your eyes, and try to be with your breathing. Focus on your breath. Using the word in, out is a simple way to keep your presence. The label in and out is like using a thought to keep you present rather than just letting your thoughts kind of do whatever they want, and then they could usually take you away. So a very simple thought that keeps you connected, involved. Yes?
Is the green piece of paper available for download anywhere?
Yes. So on our website, there's the handouts are available, but primarily through the website called audiodharma.org, where all the talks are. And on that place, you'll see on the menu, there's an intro to mindfulness course that you can click on. And then recordings of this class that I've done before are available there. So if you miss a class or would like to review a class, you can listen to the old recordings of this class. And connected to those recordings are the handouts. Oh, this one also will be up. This is recorded today, so this one also be you can listen to. So I think we're going to stop. Or you? Right, thank you. So, thank you for coming, and I hope, what?
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. I hope that, see you next week.